This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at hometeam.com.
And you're telling me that I can go to work, I can choose to make money, I can get paid, I can design my own life. What the hell am I complaining for?
Welcome back to the Color of Money podcast. This is Bomi Keating, and I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Judah Lachey, Daniel Dixon, and Imric Peace. And today we got a special treat for you. We are going to be digging in with our very own Imric Peace. You know, the patriarch of black real estate, as we call him, or Unc for short. Some of y'all prefer to call him. But we sometimes get spoiled because we have Imric with us every single day on this podcast. But what he's done in this industry is truly amazing. And what he's done as a leader in terms of building a culture of collaboration, of support, and of growth for so many people. Yeah, I think we talked a little bit the other day about the wake of impact that we leave behind in our lives. And I think that Imric's wake is very large. He's touched a lot of people. And so we're going to dig in with him today a little bit on his story and how the culture of collaboration has really driven his success.
Imric, how did it all start?
It really has started from being isolated. Since when I came in this industry and
before then, back up all the way to the very beginning. See, when we did Bo started at the very beginning.
Okay.
Bo started at when I was a wee thing.
Okay.
Back all in,
right.
Yeah.
When I was but a little child.
When I was in West Baltimore, right? I'm the youngest of five. And one of the things for me is that my dad died when I was 2 years old. So my brothers, they really took care of me. They really advised me of what to do, what not to do. And what not to do was not to do what they did, because I wasn't built that way. I was different. So they always told me I was different. I always felt different because they told me I was different. And I looked up to my brothers. I call my brothers my superheroes because everything that I am, I believe I owe it to them because they looked after me. They took care of me. They made sure that I didn't do crazy. They didn't make sure I didn't do crazy things. They told me not to do crazy things. And I listened to them. Not all the time. I did do a couple crazy things and I understood real quick that probably wasn't the best route. And even as a child, it was all about the people around me. And not that I was seeking approval, but it's the people around me, making sure I had good people around me. And I've always been a loyal friend. Right to the day, I got a friend. We've been friends since we were 5 years old. In his entire life, since 5 years old, he's 61 and I'm 60. He has not spent a consistent not 8 years out of jail since he was 14 years old. We're still friends right to the day. I already know when the phone call come up, I already know that he going to call me and ask me to put some money on his books. And that's okay. That's just the love of people. And that's my commitment to my friends. I've always had that. But growing up, I felt different. I knew I was a little bit different. I just didn't know what the difference was. Everybody else was doing something. I was cutting grass. I was shoveling snow. I was the neighborhood paper boy. I worked in the convenience store. I did whatever I had to do to make it happen. I've never been the one to sit back and wait for somebody to do something for me. I've never been the one to be dependent on anybody else. And in that space, I always pulled my friends along with me. And so it was always a place of me just collaborating with other people to get things done. Even at an early age, when people wanted to get things done, they came and got me. And it felt really good because, again, when you have people around you and you like being around people, it works exceptionally well. And so I grew up in West Baltimore with a single family home. I have three birth brothers. And then when I was 12, my best friend, his grandparents died. And so that meant he was going to have to move to South Carolina. And my mother said, no, you don't have to move to South Carolina. You can come stay here with us. So he moved across the street to my house. And so that's my fifth brother. And it's always been that way. We've been together since we were six. And so it was just one of those things where I always understood. My mother always instilled it. You always make sure that you have good people around you and you always have great friendships. And the people who aren't your friends, you leave those people alone. Don't deal with people who you can't invite into your circle. And for me, that's one of those things where I've always been the type of person, if I can't eat with you, I don't want to be around you. Mm-hmm. I'm not around people just to be around people. The people who I eat with are the people who I truly like, because I believe, and I was taught, that great friendships, great relationships, you know, they're built over food. They're built over communal environments. And so for me, just being a communal, that makes me a communal person. I was in the military when I joined the military when I was 17. Guess what? Whenever I went to the environment, when I was overseas, when I was in Japan, I was in South Carolina, I was the community guy. So all my life, I've been able to pull people together. And to be quite frank with you, when I went to Japan, I had friends, and my friends were primarily Black friends. I knew white people. I just didn't have any real white friends. I don't know if that makes sense to you guys. But when I went to Japan, that's when I really had white friends, and I started to understand that people are just people. They just come from different walks of life. And I also understood that they're not like us either. It's just different. And the reason I said they're not like us, because even though they're people, their concerns and their thoughts and what's important to them, in a lot of cases, were different because we came from a different struggle. My thought of struggle was different than their thought of struggle. And the things that was when I began to understand when I had white friends is their normal is different from my normal. We all just people, however, their normal is different, because I found myself working in an environment where I was the only, I wasn't the only, it was like two or three of us, maybe out of us, maybe 100 people, it was two or three of us that were Black. I was in electronics. I was in the Air Force. I was aircraft maintenance. It was a highly technical field, and there just wasn't that many of us. And I found myself being a spokesperson for Black people on a regular, consistent basis. And I found myself educating my white friends on what it's like to be Black. That just pulls a different thing out of you when you grow up that way. And I spent 20 years that way in the military, because I was always in an environment where I found myself educating other people on us and who we are as Black people. By the same token, they're my friends. We're on great terms. We just don't come from the same environment. On the other end, I found myself rallying the Black people together to figure out, hey, you know, there's something different that's going on here. And we need to make sure that we always present ourselves in a certain way to make sure that we present ourselves in the best light, because to be quite frank, we are the representative of Black people. And a lot of people, they don't even understand. They don't even know what it's like that. Well, they wouldn't know because they're not Black. They wouldn't understand and know what it's like to be Black in that environment. And Black people sometimes don't really understand that they are the representative. And that's the kind of idea. When you think about that and you say, you spend 20 years and you grow up, and I call it grow up because I was 17 when I joined the military.
Wow.
And you grow up in that environment where it's almost like it's a socially lonely environment, because you're spending 8 hours a day with this group of people, and you got to figure out how to fit in, what you can do, what you can't do, and how does that all work? And it's a close environment. It's like a fraternity. It's a close environment. And so I'm saying all this to say that the reason why I'm so culturally connected is because I understand what it's like to be in an environment and not be culturally connected, because you're in isolation as an adult. When you're a child, you know, children are adapted. They don't know any better. When you become an adult, you know better. I mean, you just know better. So in that place, for me, I've always been, that's the reason why I'm so hell-bent in this environment, because I understood and I learned how to adapt as an adult in an environment where you are the extreme minority. And I came into this environment in real estate, which is actually worse than being in the military. And I always wanted everybody around me, and I'm just going to be transparent, I wanted the Black people around me to feel good, to make sure that they understood that there's something else that they could do, and to understand that it's imperative that we work together to make everybody feel better so that we can rise above whatever other people think of us, because we don't see people that look like us in this environment.
I want to just take a second to go back, because something really struck me. I had the honor of seeing you eulogize your mother at her funeral. And one of the things that struck me in that moment that I have not forgotten was this unique ability. You said you're the youngest of five. This unique ability to both lead and be nurtured by the same environment. That you are somebody who has always been a leader, but you're also someone who has this sense of you are fed by the environment you're leading. Does that make sense? Like, and the way you described your child, like, I was nurtured and led by this environment. So I'm both supported by, yet I am leading. And I've always felt that is the unique combination that you've been able to create in the communities you've created, where you are, you know, some people lead and they're out in front and they're kind of blazing a trail and they're leaving people behind and people are kind of chasing after them. And you have this unique balance, I don't know how to explain it, of being both nurtured by, well, you nurture an environment. And I'm just interested in if that's something that's conscious or that just is natural coming from your earlier years.
D, all of the above. It's two things about that. It's one thing that you know that there's an expectation that you act a certain way and that you do certain things. Because again, that comes from that thing where I said, I was always told I was different. On the flip side of that, I got this from my brother. He told me this. And my brother, I struggled for a long time about being worthy of success. Right. And I was talking to my brother, and you know, I'm transparent about my family. My brother was an IV drug user. We were riding in a car one day, and I said, you know, man, I always, this is my superhero brother. We were like, I wanted to be this guy growing up because he just had such charisma. He could always relate to people. We were riding in the car and we were talking, and he said, I told him, I said, man, you know what? I look at everything around me and I ask myself all the time, I said, why me? And then he looked at me and he said, why not you? And then on the flip side, he asked me a question. He said, why is it that you never use drugs? And I looked at him and I said, why do you use drugs? And he couldn't answer that question. He said that was a defining moment in his life where he was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And he was clean. He became clean after that. And the whole idea of the way I can sum it up is this. He had a saying. He said, by the grace of God, there go I. And that's the way I believe that I live my life. By the grace of God, there go I. Because I can tell you, like with conviction, that there was one time I remember in my life that if the police had opened up my trunk, I would not be on this call right now.
Was it a body or was it drugs?
It wasn't a body and it wasn't drugs. I'll tell you exactly what it was. You remember, I was the guy that was out in front of everybody. So everybody came to me for things. And I was taking care of one of my friends. Actually, the same one that's still my friend right now. And I did not want him to walk around the streets with a gun. So I told him, put it in my trunk. You don't need to be walking around town with this thing. I put it in my trunk. I was riding through a neighborhood and I got stopped by the police. It never dawned on me that this thing was in my trunk. And then as the police start asking me questions, I realized that it was in my trunk. Didn't belong to me. I'm working to keep somebody else out of trouble. And if that police officer had looked in that trunk, and I'll tell you exactly what it was a sawed-off shotgun, which is totally illegal. If that police officer had looked in my trunk, it's no explanation. It was mine. It was my car. We wouldn't be friends right now. And I'm looking out for other people. It wasn't even, it had nothing to do with me, except I didn't want him to be walking around town with that thing in his anywhere.
As long as I've known you, and we've always had this grace, you've always had this collaboration and connectivity with a lot of people. Has that always been it? Has there never been a chip on your shoulder? There's never been anger. There's never been resentment. It's always been positive community love kind of thing, or
pretty much. Yeah, that came from my mother. Like Bo said, when I eulogized my mother, if you had heard what I said, I'm like a personality wise. I got a lot of that from my mom. But by the same token, my brothers always made sure that I was taken care of, and they always gave me great advice. Even though they didn't follow the best advice, even though they didn't do the best things, they weren't bad people. They just did unfortunate things. I believe that sense of community comes from that, because I understood the way that everybody poured into me. I understood the way that people poured into me. And I just always looked at it as my obligation to pour into other people, because again, by the grace of God, there go I. As far as being negative, that's like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. Really? Your negativity only haunts your soul. It doesn't haunt the person who did something to you. It doesn't haunt any other situation. It only haunts your soul.
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit hometeam.com to learn more. So, Emmerich, how did you actually get into the real estate industry? You say you were in the Air Force.
Yes.
And then you decided what?
Well, I was in the Air Force. And just to be clear, my mom never made more than $8.50 an hour in her life. However, my mom owned three properties clear and free. So I don't know of living in a rental property, because as far as I can remember, she always owned something, and she instilled, you should own, right? And I came back from Japan, and I came to Maryland, and the only thing, I was 22, and the only thing I think about, I have to buy a house. It was never even a consideration to rent. And I bought a house. I didn't know any better, so I bought what I bought, and it was cool. It worked out. Then I went to buy a second house, and I knew a little bit more. And I realized how deficient these people were. And I said, if they can make a living giving poor services, I can make a great living giving great services. And I was in the military. And again, that whole community thing, I was helping all my friends buy a house before I got a real estate license. I was explaining to them, this is what you do this. And I was telling them how to use their military non-taxable benefits to buy a house rather than buy a new car. And so the whole idea for me was I was helping all these other people buy a house, and I was looking at these crummy agents, and they all had agents that sucked. I said, hell, I may as well go get my license and make some money doing this. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. And I loved it. Absolutely love it.
And Emmer, you started out, well, you were still in the military, right?
Yeah.
So you were part-time.
No, I had two full-time jobs.
Okay. I love a little bit about that.
I worked 11 years and 8 months while I was in the Air Force. And my friends, 11 years and 8 months is a dual career. And my friends that are in the military, they will tell you that joke, just like I fall asleep anywhere, I fell asleep on midnight shift. I worked on midnight shift. I tried my best to work midnight shift. So I would work, and let me give you my schedule. I would work midnight shift. I would go in at 11:30. I would get off at 7:30 in the morning. Since I worked midnight shift, there weren't that many airplanes taking off. So if there weren't airplanes taking off, we would either be playing cards, sitting on the launch truck, doing something. I would go to sleep, and they would play cards and watch TV. I said, look, I choose not to play cards or watch TV. I'd rather go to sleep because I'm going to sell some real estate in the morning. So I would sit up in the chair. I would go to sleep. I would wake up. I would do my home inspections at 8:30 in the morning. I would always schedule my home inspections at 8:30 in the morning so I could get off work and go straight to the home inspection. After I finished home inspection, I could go home and go to sleep for a couple of hours and then go to the office. I would go to the office for a few hours. Then my kids had either a basketball practice or baseball practice or something. I would leave. I would go to basketball practice, whatever they were doing. I would do that for a couple hours. Then I would go back home, go to sleep for a couple more hours, right? And then go back to work the next day. I did that for 11 years and 8 months.
Wow. You know what? You earned your sleep. I'm never going to talk about you again when you just randomly fall asleep in inappropriate environments.
He's catching up.
Yeah. I'm not going to ever say nothing about that again. You deserve that sleep.
What motivated you, right? Because I think a lot of people, they see what you've accomplished. They see the back end. And they think that just you popped up Like Emory just popped up and built the largest black owned real estate office in America. He just popped up out of nowhere. So like, what do you say to people when you're trying to coach them through this idea of what it takes to compound this gradually then suddenly exercise?
Well, the first thing, like I said, if you don't mind, it doesn't matter. I said, I used to say this all the time. The slaves worked a lot harder than I'll ever work. So whatever I'm doing, it doesn't even have a measure of what the slaves did. They woke up at the crack of dawn, before the crack of dawn, worked all day in the hot sun, into the night, didn't get paid, had to take care of whatever they had to take care of outside of working the fields or doing what they had to do. They had to get up in the morning and do the same thing over and over again. And you telling me that I can go to work, I can choose to make money, I can get paid, I can design my own life. What the hell am I complaining for? The other thing was that I said that I want my kids to have a better opportunity than I ever had. And I was not moving back to West Baltimore, even though I own a house in West Baltimore. So if my whole life melted down everywhere, right? I have a house in West Baltimore that I can move to and I can live off of Social Security and my retirement check. And I could still be happy there too, also, just knowing that I'm alive and I'm healthy.
As you were winning selling houses, though, I mean, that's a brutal schedule. So, like, what was the goal? Was it a money goal? Was it just a comfort goal? Like, what was the goal?
I'm being transparent. The goal was just whatever I do, I'm hell-bent on being exceptional at it. So the goal was to help as many families as possible, be exceptional at selling real estate, and make sure that my kid, that I raised happy, healthy, well-adjusted adults that would not have a financial challenge. Until about probably about 7-8 years in the business. Then my goal was to open up a real estate company that had 250 agents in a black community, because what I saw in the black community from the real estate profession, it was not what I saw in the white community. Let me be transparent. Bo, you know this, in Prince George's County, your offices look one way. You go to D.C., Montgomery County, Northern Virginia, it's a totally different aesthetic. I mean, and I thought that was unacceptable for our community. Why do we deserve less? Why should we get less? You don't even come to our county to get great real estate training, because there is none. We had to go to another jurisdiction. So in that space, I was driven to say, I want to open up a company where agents are appreciated. They come and they learn and they become well-educated so that they can serve this community at a high level. More importantly, when you walk in the front door of that establishment, you know and understand that you're appreciated and that this is a place of great quality, and you can bring your friends, family, relatives, customers, and clients here and understand that this is excellence at a highest level. And that drove me to do something different. So I knew I had to get all my money right. I knew I had to do certain things. And that was my goal. I had my kids were on a good path. All of those things were great. That 250 person office was a motivating factor for me.
Let's talk a little bit about instilling excellence, because that's something I know. Whenever I used to go up in Emmerich's office, I'd feel all slobby because they had these crazy dress codes and everyone looked like they're going to church and they had all these rules. So like, talk to me a little bit about building a culture of excellence.
It's unfortunate that a lot of times in our community, we were never taught what is business excellence. We weren't taught what good business is. We weren't taught that you have to present yourself a certain way in order to get a certain result in the business world. Because a lot of times we go, and we still do it right now, we go in other communities, and I'm going to say it, we'll go in the white community, and they say, well, they wear polo shirts, and they wear t-shirts, and they wear shorts, and they wear jeans, and they do business. Why can't we do business that way? As I said to you before, when I was in the military, we come from two different places. And for me, I understood that in order for us to be the best people that we could be from a professional basis, we had to establish a culture of excellence. We had to have a dress code. We cannot take things for granted because nothing is given to us lightly. And we absolutely had to have a certain level of excellence in the way that we look and the way that we talk and the way that we conduct business, because we don't get a second chance. The people always say, well, you have one chance to make a first impression. We only gonna get one chance to do anything, because if it does not work well with us, we will be ostracized, whether the person's black, white, it doesn't matter. It's business. We're gonna be ostracized. And I never wanted that to happen on my watch with the people who were, I believe, under my care. Really, I call my office a ministry. Because it is. I could make more money doing something else. I really could. However, I'm committed to the people in my community to a different level.
So, Emmerich, when did you actually hit the 250 mark? And tell us a little bit about where the office is at now.
We hit the 250 mark about 3 years in. So in 2007, we opened up in 2004, like around 2007, we hit the 250 mark. Probably a little before that. And that's what I set out to do. I didn't even conceive 300. I didn't conceive 400. I didn't conceive 500. I didn't conceive 600. And those are the numbers that we've done. We've been as high as 610. We rolled back a little bit. We went back to 575. Then we went to 6. Then we came back to 550. Now we have 575 and growing. So we've been consistently above 550 for the past 7 years.
Let me ask this is maybe a tough question, but one of the things that I've always struggled with in leadership in our industry is the structure of our industry is fairly transient, yet we're dealing with people, and people grow over time in environments that nurture them. And so as a leader in real estate, you pour into people. Anyone who's done this for a long time could tell you countless stories of people they poured into over time who then just one day wake up and say, hey, I don't need you anymore.
I'm going to Capital Properties.
No. And Emmerich and I have lived this thing, right? Both on a concept idea. I call it the like Booker T. Washington, W.E.B. Du Bois. Like if you look at the history, it was like, where are we focused? Are we focused on building the base, which is critical to our community?
Mm-hmm.
Or are we focused on highlighting exceptionalism? Well, there's no exceptionalism if you don't have a base, right? If you don't have an opportunity to get, both are critically necessary in our community. And then you put the real estate layer on top of that, where there's no tie and no loyalty. And so I'm interested, one of the things I admire most about Emmerich's grace is that his heart for people has not been dampened in any way by having people, you know, go through that process and then like run off to some other place or go here. Yes. And he still cheers them on. He still is happy about it. And so how do you do that as a leader? That's like an internal process as a leader that I know all of us sometimes struggle with in this industry where we pour into people. We pour into people for years. I mean, I can tell you, I got an example. My EA from before I got into real estate, I brought him over. He made $18,000. He started making $950,000. And then he said, oh, Compass offered me a check for $75,000. You understand why I'm leaving? I said, do you understand what the last 15 years took to get you from here to here? But today it's like, okay, what's in it for me this year? So I'm doing this other thing. And I think everybody in real estate's experience, anybody who's been a leader with heart in real estate has felt the deflation of that experience. Yet, and I've seen you go through that.
Wait a minute, Bo. I'm getting ready to show y'all something. I'm going to show y'all something. Can y'all see my screen? Do y'all see what that says?
That's your friend calling from jail?
Yes.
He wants that money on that JPEG.
So, Bo, let me tell you like this. And we've been through this. Like, people come to our market center and they grow up and they start making more money. Their lives change. They're making more money than they've ever made. And they, matter of fact, they're making more money than anybody in their family makes. And then sometimes they'll say, well, I want to go over to Capital Properties because they're having a different conversation. So they go because they see Bo.
Why you got to use another KW office? Use somebody else.
No, because this is love. This is love. I mean, this is real. This is like real. This is real experience. So then they say, well, I want to go over to Capital Properties. Bo does commercial. Bo does this. And they do this. I just find it interesting. It's like, I don't give a damn where you go. If you don't change who you are, going over there ain't going to make you no better. Mm-hmm. And that's no matter where they go. And that's the way I've always been. I said, unless you change you, the question is, who are you willing to become to get what you think you want? That's the first part. The second part, and I said this before, by the grace of God, there go I. I work to stay out of judgment. That's the other part. The third part is that I say this. I said, when I found my best opportunity, I was looking for an opportunity. So I can't get upset with someone who's looking for their opportunity, wherever they think their opportunity might be. I just hope that you find it. More importantly, I hope that if you don't find it, you understand and respect what it took to get you to where you thought your opportunity was. And if you don't, I'm okay with that because I did my part. I did what I was supposed to do. And I can't get mad at you because you're searching for your life, for your existence. I'm happy with what I did and how I lived my life to make sure that somebody else got better. And that's the only way I can look at it. And sometimes, let me tell you, the initial shock, oh, it pisses me off. Let me make that clear. There's nothing in my mind that says I like to lose. And I believe that when you pour that much into somebody and they leave, then you've lost something. Now, on the flip side of that, my other question is, okay, what did I do or what could I have done better to keep them from leaving? Because a lot of times people don't leave structures, they leave people. And how could I have been a better leader to add more value to that person's life? And whether they see it as value or not, that's the only way I can look at it. And I have to do a self-examination. And that's the way I see it.
I kind of have a, like, it's my little PSA to people and my little public service announcement to people in real estate. This is a business where you have an opportunity. It takes determination. It takes a lot of individual effort. It takes a lot of hard work. But I think if you really pay attention, if you really pay attention to the leaders that actually sustain and have great lives in this business, they're intimately aware of what made them. Regardless of what opportunity they take, regardless of where they go, regardless of if they feel they outgrew an environment and they were right or wrong about that, they have an understanding of what that contributed to them. And I've always thought, that's why I asked you that question in the beginning, that's one of the things that makes you so special in your grace. You don't say, I got out of West Baltimore. You say, West Baltimore made me. Mm-hmm. It gave me lessons. It gave me strength. You don't say, I did better. You know, Emmerich was the youngest brother, but he's the leader. He's the one the family puts up. He doesn't say, hey, I made it and my brothers screwed up. He says, here's what I learned from my brothers. And I think that our entire industry could use a little Emmerich piece. Mm-hmm. Where people stand up and say, God damn it, I might have been over there and that might have been tough and I might be in a better place today, but damn it, I learned something there. Somebody poured into me. Some might say West Baltimore ain't got no shit over there, but there was somebody pouring into somebody. There was somebody caring about somebody. And you are not where you are today because you did it alone. You were part of some community. Mm-hmm. And the way in which you honor that community, the way in which you honor that experience says much, much more about you than it says about the experiences and the places that you were.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's beautiful.
That's really good.
Even if people were to leave you, that means that there's a little of Emmerich peace all out there, wherever they went, right? And so thank you for that. Thank you for being you.
Thank you
for being the leader of the Black Real Estate Agents. Thank you for being Unc, the patriarch of Black real estate. And before we end, I didn't want to mess up Bo's beautiful ending, but what is next for Emmerich peace?
Coaching and personal development.
Okay.
I'm working on it right now. I'm literally working on it right now.
What does that mean?
I'm working on a coaching platform. And let me tell you exactly what it is. And I'm going to put it in context of real estate people can understand. Everybody goes to a class. We go to a lead generation class. We go to Bold. We go to Ignite. We go to Win with Sellers. We go to How to Be More Productive. We go to Mike Ferry. We go to all these different training programs. When you leave the training program, why is it that these people don't have this like exponential growth? They have this tremendous growth because they know what to do, right? But then they still don't damn it do it. I want to tap into that space. Why don't you do what you do? And I believe that everybody has personal emotional triggers where they go back to some place in their life where somebody told them they weren't worthy, they didn't deserve it, and they have a certain amount of self-doubt where they sabotage themselves so that they can't be the best version of themselves. And I want to go into a space, into a mindset space with reality, not hypothetical. Like, what is it about you that keeps you from going to the next level? Not speaking in generality, other people, you. And I'm working on it. It's working well. I've taught a few classes to help people understand you got to deal with you. I don't give a damn where you go. You're going to take you with you. So you better figure out what's wrong with you to help you become a better person. And that's the space I'm going into, Daniel.
I love it.
Well, you've heard it, man. That's a lot here. You guys don't have to miss out on this great learning education from the great Emmerich Peace. You can join us every week here on the Color of Money podcast, where you can get and tap into that wisdom and continue to build a community that lifts everybody and leaves a wake of great impact behind you. So thank you, Emmerich, for today. Until next time.
Follow the Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.